starting to clear my head. Last night I dreamed of her. Blue eyes, breathy voice. Her sentences ending with "sir" as she knelt before me. Since I've met her, my dreams have been a welcome change from the occasional nightmare. I wonder what Flynn would make of that. The thought is disconcerting, so I ignore it and concentrate on pushing my body to its limits along the bank of the Willamette. As my feet pound the walkway, sunshine breaks through the clouds and it gives me hope. 2 hours later, as I jog back to the hotel, I pass a coffee shop. Maybe I should take her for coffee. Like a date? Well, no, not a date. I laugh at the ridiculous thought. Just a chat. An interview of sorts. Then I can find out a little more about this enigmatic woman and if she's interested, or if I'm on a wild goose chase. I'm alone in the elevator as I stretch out. Finishing my stretches in my hotel suite, I'm centered and calm for the first time since I arrived in Portland. Breakfast has been delivered, and I'm famished. It's not a feeling I tolerate, ever. Sitting down to breakfast in my sweats, I decide to eat before I shower. There's a brisk knock on the door. I open it, and Taylor stands on the threshold.
Good morning, Mr. Gray.
Morning. They ready for me?
Yes, sir. They're set up in room 601.
I'll be right down. I close the door and tuck my shirt into my gray pants. My hair is wet from my shower, but I don't give a shit. One glance at the louche fucker in the mirror, and I exit to follow Taylor to the elevator. Room 601 is crowded with people, lights, and camera boxes, but I spot her immediately. She's standing to the side. Her hair is loose, a lush, glossy mane that falls beneath her breasts. She's wearing tight jeans and chucks with a short-sleeved navy jacket and a white t-shirt beneath. Are jeans and chucks her signature look? While not very convenient, they do flatter her shapely legs. Her eyes, disarming as ever, widen as I approach.
Miss Steele, we meet again.
She takes my extended hand, and for a moment I want to squeeze hers and raise it to my lips.
Don't be absurd, Gray.
She turns her delicious pink and waves in the direction of her friend, who is standing too close, waiting for my attention.
Mr. Gray, this is Catherine Cavanaugh, she says.
With reluctance, I release her and turn to the persistent Miss Cavanaugh. She's tall, striking, and well-groomed, like her father, but she has her mother's eyes, and I have her to thank for my introduction to the delightful Miss Steele. That thought makes me feel a little more benevolent toward her.
The tenacious Miss Cavanaugh, how do you do?
I trust you're feeling better. Anastasia said you were unwell last week.
I'm fine, thank you, Mr. Gray.
She has a firm, confident handshake, and I doubt she's ever faced a day of hardship in her privileged life. I wonder why these women are friends. They have nothing in common.
Thank you for taking the time to do this, Catherine says.
It's a pleasure, I reply, and glance at Anastasia, who rewards me with her telltale flush. Is it just me who makes her blush? The thought pleases me.
This is Jose Rodriguez, our photographer,
Anastasia says, and her face lights up as she introduces him. Shit, is this the boyfriend? Rodriguez blooms under Anna's sweet smile.
Are they fucking?
Mr. Gray.
Rodriguez gives me a dark look as we shake hands. It's a warning. He's telling me to back off. He likes her. He likes her a lot.
Well, game on, kid.
Mr. Rodriguez, where would you like me? My tone is a challenge, and he hears it, but Catherine intervenes and waves me toward a chair.
Ah, she likes to be in charge.
The thought amuses me as I sit. Another young man who appears to be working with Rodriguez switches on the lights, and momentarily I'm blinded.
Hell.
As the glare recedes, I search out the lovely Miss Steele. She's standing at the back of the room, observing the proceedings.
Does she always shy away like this?
Maybe that's why she and Cavanaugh are friends. She's content to be in the background and let Catherine take center stage. A natural submissive. The photographer appears professional enough and absorbed in the job he's been assigned to do. I regard Miss Steele as she watches both of us. Our eyes meet. Hers are honest and innocent, and for a moment I reconsider my plan. But then she bites her lip and my breath catches in my throat. Back down, Anastasia. I will her to stop staring, and as if she can hear me, she's the first to look away. Good girl. Catherine asks me to stand as Rodriguez continues to take snaps. Then we're done, and this is my chance. Thank you again, Mr. Gray. Catherine surges forward and shakes my hand, followed by the photographer, who regards me with ill-concealed disapproval. His antagonism makes me smile. Oh, man, you have no idea. I look forward to reading the article, Miss Kavanaugh, I say, giving her a brief, polite nod. It's Anna I want to talk to. Will you walk with me, Miss Steele? I ask when I reach her by the door. Sure, she says with surprise. Seize the day, Gray. I mutter some platitude to those still in the room and usher her out the door, wanting to put some distance between her and Rodriguez. In the corridor, she stands fiddling with her hair, then her fingers, as Taylor follows me out. I'll call you, Taylor, I say, and when he's almost out of earshot, I ask Anna to join me for coffee, my breath held for her response. Her long lashes flicker over her eyes. I have to drive everyone home, she says with dismay. Taylor, I call after him, making her jump. I must make her nervous, and I don't know if this is good or bad. And she can't stop fidgeting. Thinking about all the ways I could make her stop is distracting. Are they based at the university? She nods, and I ask Taylor to take her friends home. There. Now can you join me for coffee?
Mr. Gray, this really...
She stops. Shit. It's a no. I'm going to lose this deal. She looks directly at me, eyes bright.
Look, Taylor doesn't have to drive them home. I'll swap vehicles with Kate, if you give me a moment.
My relief is tangible, and I grin. I have a date. Opening the door, I let her back into the room as Taylor conceals his puzzled look. Can you grab my jacket, Taylor? Certainly, sir. He turns on his heel, his lips twitching as he heads up the corridor. I watch him with narrowed eyes as he disappears into the elevator, while I lean against the wall and wait for Miss Steele. What the hell am I going to say to her? How would you like to be my submissive? No. Steady, Gray. Let's take this one stage at a time. Taylor is back within a couple of minutes, holding my jacket.
Will that be all, sir?
Yes, thanks. He gives it to me and leaves me standing like an idiot in the corridor. How long is Anastasia going to be? I check my watch. She must be negotiating the car swap with Catherine. Or she's talking to Rodriguez, explaining that she's just going for coffee to placate me and keep me sweet for the article. My thoughts darken. Maybe she's kissing him goodbye. Damn. She emerges a moment later, and I'm pleased. She doesn't look like she's just been kissed. Okay, she says with resolve. Let's do coffee. But her reddening cheeks somewhat undermine her effort to look confident. After you, Miss Steele. I conceal my delight as she falls into step ahead of me. As I catch up with her, my curiosity is piqued about her relationship with Catherine, specifically their compatibility. I ask her how long they've known each other.
Since our freshman year, she's a good friend.
Her voice is full of warmth. Anna is clearly devoted. She came all the way to Seattle to interview me when Catherine was ill, and I find myself hoping that Miss Kavanaugh treats her with the same loyalty and respect. At the elevators, I press the call button, and almost immediately the doors open. A couple in a passionate embrace spring apart, embarrassed to be caught. Ignoring them, we step into the elevator, but I catch Anastasia's impish smile. As we travel to the first floor, the atmosphere is thick with unfulfilled desire. And I don't know if it's emanating from the couple behind us or from me. Yes, I want her. Will she want what I have to offer? I'm relieved when the doors open again and I take her hand, which is cool and not clammy as expected. Perhaps I don't affect her as much as I'd like. The thought is disheartening. In our wake, we hear embarrassed giggling from the couple. What is it about elevators? I mutter. And I have to admit there's something wholesome and naive about their giggling that's totally charming. Miss Steele seems that innocent, just like them. And as we walk onto the street, I question my motives again. She's too young. She's too inexperienced. But damn, I like the feel of her hand in mine. In the coffee shop, I direct her to find a table and ask what she wants to drink. She stutters through her order. English breakfast tea, hot water, bag on the side. That's a new one to me. No coffee? I'm not keen on coffee. Okay, bag out tea. Sugar? No thanks, she says, staring down at her fingers. Anything to eat? No thank you. She shakes her head and tosses her hair over her shoulder, highlighting glints of auburn. I have to wait in line while the two matronly women behind the counter exchange inane pleasantries with all their customers. It's frustrating and keeping me from my objective. Anastasia. Hey, handsome, what can I get you? The older woman asks with a twinkle in her eye. It's just a pretty face, sweetheart. I'll have a coffee with steamed milk, English breakfast tea, tea bag on the side, and a blueberry muffin. Anastasia might change her mind and eat.
You visiting Portland?
Yes.
The weekend?
Yes.
The weather sure has picked up today.
Yes.
I hope you get out to enjoy some sunshine.
Please stop talking to me and hurry the fuck up. Yes. I hiss through my teeth and glance over at Anna, who quickly looks away. She's watching me. Is she checking me out? A bubble of hope swells in my chest.
There you go.
The woman winks and places the drinks on my tray.
Pay at the register, honey, and you have a nice day now.
I manage a cordial response. Thank you. At the table, Anastasia is staring at her fingers, reflecting on heaven knows what.
Me?
Penny for your thoughts, I ask. She jumps and turns red as I set out her tea and my coffee. She sits mute and mortified. Why? Does she really not want to be here? Your thoughts? I ask again, and she fidgets with the tea bag.
This is my favorite tea, she says, and I revise my mental note that it's Twining's English breakfast tea she likes.
I watch her dunk the tea bag in the teapot. It's an elaborate and messy spectacle. She fishes it out almost immediately and places the used tea bag on her saucer. My mouth is twitching with my amusement. As she tells me she likes her tea weak and black, for a moment I think she's describing what she likes in a man. Get a grip, Gray. She's talking about tea. Enough of this preamble. It's time for some due diligence in this deal. Is he your boyfriend? Her brows knit together, forming a small V above her nose.
Who?
This is a good response. The photographer, Jose Rodriguez. She laughs at me. At me. And I don't know if it's from relief or if she thinks I'm funny. It's annoying. I can't get her measure. Does she like me or not? She tells me he's just a friend. Oh, sweetheart. He wants to be more than a friend.
Why did you think he was my boyfriend? She asks.
The way you smiled at him and he at you.
You have no idea, do you?
The boy is smitten.
He's more like family, she says.
Okay, so the lust is one-sided, and for a moment I wonder if she realizes how lovely she is. She eyes the blueberry muffin as I peel back the paper, and for a moment I imagine her on her knees beside me as I feed her, a morsel at a time. The thought is diverting and arousing. "Do you want some?" I ask. She shakes her head.
"No, thanks."
Her voice is hesitant, and she stares once more at her hands. Why is she so jittery? Maybe because of me? And the boy I met yesterday at the store, he's not your boyfriend?
No, Paul's just a friend. I told you yesterday.
She frowns again as if she's confused and crosses her arms in defense. She doesn't like being asked about these boys. I remember how uncomfortable she seemed when the kid at the store put his arm around her, staking his claim.
"Why do you ask?" she adds.
"You seem nervous around men." Her eyes widen. They really are beautiful. The color of the ocean at Cabo, the bluest of blue seas. I should take her there.
What?
Where did that come from?
"I find you intimidating,"
she says, and looks down, fidgeting once more with her fingers. On the one hand, she's so submissive, but on the other, she's challenging. "You should find me intimidating." Yeah, she should. There aren't many people brave enough to tell me that I intimidate them. She's honest, and I tell her so. But when she averts her eyes, I don't know what she's thinking. It's frustrating. Does she like me? Or is she tolerating this meeting to keep Kavanaugh's interview on track? Which is it? "You're a mystery, Miss Steele."
"There's nothing mysterious about me."
"I think you're very self-contained. Like any good submissive. Except when you blush, of course, which is often. I just wish I knew what you were blushing about." There. That will goad her into a response. Popping a small piece of the blueberry muffin into my mouth, I await her reply.
"Do you always make such personal observations?"
"That's not that personal, is it?" "I hadn't realized I was. Have I offended you?"
"No."
"Good."
"But you're very high-handed."
"I'm used to getting my own way, Anastasia. In all things."
"I don't doubt it,"
she mutters, and then wants to know why I haven't asked her to call me by my first name. What? And I remember her leaving my office in the elevator, and how my name sounded coming out of her smart mouth. Has she seen through me? Is she deliberately antagonizing me? I tell her that no one calls me Christian except my family. I don't even know if it's my real name. Don't go there, Gray. I changed the subject. I want to know about her. Are you an only child? Her eyelashes flutter several times before she answers that she is. Tell me about your parents. She rolls her eyes and I have to fight the compulsion to scold her. My mom lives in Georgia with her new husband, Bob. My stepdad lives in Montesano. Of course I know all this from Welch's background check, but it's important to hear it from her. Her lips soften with a fond smile when she mentions her stepdad. Your father? I ask.
My father died when I was a baby.
For a moment I'm catapulted into my nightmares, looking at a prostrate body on a grimy floor. I'm sorry, I mutter.
I don't remember him,
she says, dragging me back to the now. Her expression is clear and bright, and I know that Raymond Steele has been a good father to this girl. Her mother's relationship with her, on the other hand, that remains to be seen. And your mother remarried? Her laugh is bitter.
You could say that.
But she doesn't elaborate. She's one of the few women I've met who can sit in silence, which is great, but not what I want at the moment. You're not giving much away, are you?
Neither are you,
she parries. Oh, Miss Steele. Game on. And it's with great pleasure and a smirk that I remind her that she's interviewed me already. I can recollect some quite probing questions. Yes, you asked me if I was gay. My statement has the desired effect, and she's embarrassed. She starts babbling about herself, and a few details hit home. Her mother is an incurable romantic. I suppose someone on her fourth marriage is embracing hope over experience. Is she like her mother? I can't bring myself to ask her. If she says she is, then I have no hope. And I don't want this interview to end. I'm enjoying myself too much. I ask about her stepfather, and she confirms my hunch. It's obvious she loves him. Her face is luminous when she talks about him. His job, he's a carpenter. His hobbies, he likes European soccer and fishing. She preferred to live with him when her mom married the third time. Interesting. She straightens her shoulders. Tell me about your parents, she demands, in an attempt to divert the conversation from her family. I don't like talking about mine, so I give her the bare details. My dad's a lawyer, my mom's a pediatrician. They live in Seattle.
What do your siblings do?
She wants to go there. I give her the short answer that Elliot works in construction and Mia is at cooking school in Paris. She listens, rapt.
I hear Paris is lovely, she says with a dreamy expression.
It's beautiful. Have you been?
I've never left mainland USA.
The cadence in her voice falls, tinged with regret. I could take her there. Would you like to go? First Cabo, now Paris. Get a grip, Gray.
To Paris? Of course. But it's England that I'd really like to visit.
Her face brightens with excitement. Miss Steele wants to travel. But why England? I ask her.
It's the home of Shakespeare, Austen, the Bronte sisters, Thomas Hardy. I'd like to see the places that inspired those people to write such wonderful books.
It's obvious this is her first love. Books. She said as much in Clayton's yesterday. That means I'm competing with Darcy, Rochester, and Angel Clare, impossible romantic heroes. Here's the proof I needed. She's an incurable romantic, like her mother. And this isn't going to work. To add insult to injury, she looks at her watch. She's done. I've blown this deal.
I'd better go. I have to study, she says.
I offer to walk her back to her friend's car, which means I'll have the walk back to the hotel to make my case. But should I?
Thank you for the tea, Mr. Gray, she says.
You're welcome, Anastasia. It's my pleasure. As I say the words, I realize that the last 20 minutes have been enjoyable. Giving her my most dazzling smile, guaranteed to disarm, I offer her my hand. Come, I say. She takes my hand, and as we walk back to the Heathman, I can't shake how agreeable her hand feels in mine. Maybe this could work. Do you always wear jeans? I ask.
Mostly,
she says, and it's two strikes against her. Incurable romantic who only wears jeans. I like my women in skirts. I like them accessible.
Do you have a girlfriend?
She asks out of the blue, and it's the third strike. I'm out of this fledgling deal. She wants romance, and I can't offer her that. No, Anastasia. I don't do the girlfriend thing. Stricken with a frown, she turns abruptly and stumbles into the road. Shit, Anna! I shout, tugging her toward me to stop her from falling in the path of an idiot cyclist who's flying the wrong way up the street. All of a sudden, she's in my arms, clutching my biceps, staring up at me. Her eyes are startled, and for the first time I notice a darker ring of blue circling her irises. They're beautiful. More beautiful this close. Her pupils dilate, and I know I could fall into her gaze and never return. She takes a deep breath. Are you okay? My voice sounds alien and distant, and I realize she's touching me, and I don't care. My fingers caress her cheek. Her skin is soft and smooth, and as I brush my thumb against her lower lip, my breath catches in my throat. Her body is pressed against mine, and the feel of her breasts and her heat through my shirt is arousing. She has a fresh, wholesome fragrance that reminds me of my grandfather's apple orchard. Closing my eyes, I inhale, committing her scent to memory. When I open them, she's still staring at me, entreating me, begging me, her eyes on my mouth. Shit. She wants me to kiss her. And I want to. Just once. Her lips are parted, ready, waiting. Her mouth felt welcoming beneath my thumb. No. 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 Don't do this, Gray. She's not the girl for you. She wants hearts and flowers, and you don't do that shit. I close my eyes to blot her out and fight the temptation, and when I open them again, my decision is made. Anastasia, I whisper, you should steer clear of me. I'm not the man for you. The little V forms between her brows, and I think she's stopped breathing. Breathe, Anastasia, breathe. I have to let her go before I do something stupid, but I'm surprised at my reluctance. I want to hold her for a moment longer. I'm going to stand you up and let you go. I step back and she releases her hold on me, yet weirdly, I don't feel any relief. I slide my hands to her shoulders to ensure she can stand. Her expression clouds with humiliation. She's mortified by my rebuff. Hell, I didn't mean to hurt you. I've got this, she says, disappointment ringing in her clipped tone. She's formal and distant, but she doesn't move out of my hold. Thank you, she adds. For what? For saving me? And I want to tell her that I'm saving her from me, that it's a noble gesture, but that's not what she wants to hear. That idiot was riding the wrong way. I'm glad I was here. I shudder to think what could have happened to you. Now it's me that's babbling, and I still can't let her go. I offer to sit with her in the hotel, knowing it's a ploy to prolong my time with her, and only then do I release her. She shakes her head, her back ramrod stiff, and wraps her arms around herself in a protective gesture. A moment later, she bolts across the street, and I have to hurry to keep up with her. When we reach the hotel, she turns and faces me once more, composed.
Thanks for the tea and doing the photo shoot.
She regards me dispassionately, and regret flares in my gut. Anastasia, I can't think what to say, except that I'm sorry.
What, Christian?
She snaps. Whoa. She's mad at me, pouring all the contempt she can into each syllable of my name. It's novel. And she's leaving. And I don't want her to go. Good luck with your exams. Her eyes flash with hurt and indignation.
Thanks,
she mutters, disdain in her tone.
Goodbye, Mr. Gray.
She turns away and strides up the street toward the underground garage. I watch her go, hoping that she'll give me a second look, but she doesn't. She disappears into the building, leaving in her wake a trace of regret, the memory of her beautiful blue eyes, and the scent of an apple orchard in the fall. Thursday, May 19th, 2011.
No!
My scream bounces off the bedroom walls and wakes me from my nightmare. I'm smothered in sweat, with the stench of stale beer, cigarettes, and poverty in my nostrils, and a lingering dread of drunken violence. Sitting up, I put my head in my hands as I try to calm my escalated heart rate and erratic breathing. It's been the same for the last four nights. Glancing at the clock, I see it's 3 a.m. I have two major meetings tomorrow. Today. And I need a clear head and some sleep. Damn it, what I'd give for a good night's sleep.
And I have a round of fucking golf with Bastille. I should cancel the golf. The thought of playing and losing darkens my already bleak mood. Clambering out of bed, I wander down the corridor and into the kitchen. There, I fill a glass with water and catch sight of myself, dressed only in pajama pants, reflected in the glass wall at the other side of the room. I turn away in disgust. You turned her down. She wanted you, and you turned her down. It was for her own good. This has needled me for days now. Her beautiful face appears in my mind without warning, taunting me. If my shrink was back from his vacation in England, I could call him. His psychobabble shit would stop me feeling this lousy. Gray, she was just a pretty girl. Perhaps I need a distraction. A new sub, maybe. It's been too long since Susanna. I contemplate calling Elena in the morning. She always finds suitable candidates for me. But the truth is, I don't want anyone new. I want Anna. Her disappointment, her wounded indignation, and her contempt remain with me. She walked away without a backward glance. Perhaps I raised her hopes by asking her out for coffee, only to disappoint her. Maybe I should find some way to apologize. Then I can forget about this whole sorry episode and get the girl out of my head. Leaving the glass in the sink for my housekeeper to wash, I trudge back to bed. The radio alarm jolts to life at 5:45 as I'm staring at the ceiling. I haven't slept, and I'm exhausted. Fuck, this is ridiculous. The program on the radio is a welcome distraction until the second news item. It's about the sale of a rare manuscript, an unfinished novel by Jane Austen called The Watsons that's being auctioned in London. Books, she said. Christ. Even the news reminds me of Little Miss Bookworm. She's an incurable romantic who loves the English classics, but then so do I, but for different reasons. I don't have any Jane Austen first editions or Brontes for that matter, but I do have two Thomas Hardys. Of course. This is it. This is what I can do. Moments later, I'm in my library with Jude the Obscure and a boxed set of Tess of the D'Urbervilles in its three volumes laid out on the billiard table in front of me. Both are bleak books with tragic themes. Hardy had a dark, twisted soul. Like me. I shake off the thought and examine the books. Even though Jude is in better condition, it's no contest. In Jude, there is no redemption, so I'll send her Tess with a suitable quote. I know it's not the most romantic book, considering the evils that befall the heroine, but she has a brief taste of romantic love in the bucolic idyll that is the English countryside, and Tess does exact revenge on the man who wronged her. But that's not the point. Anna mentioned Hardy as a favorite, and I'm sure she's never seen, let alone owned, a first edition. You sound like the ultimate consumer. Her judgmental retort from the interview comes back to haunt me. Yes, I like to possess things, things that will rise in value like first editions. Feeling calmer and more composed and a little pleased with myself, I head back into my closet and change into my running gear. In the back of the car, I leaf through book one of the Tess first edition, looking for a quote, and at the same time wonder when Anna's last exam will take place. I read the book years ago and have a hazy recollection of the plot. Fiction was my sanctuary when I was a teenager. My mother always marveled that I read. Eliot not so much. I craved the escape that fiction provided. He didn't need an escape. Mr. Gray, Taylor interrupts. We're here, sir. He climbs out of the car and opens my door. I'll be outside at 2:00 to take you to your golf game. I nod and head into Gray House, the books tucked under my arm. The young receptionist greets me with a flirtatious wave. Every day, like a cheesy tune on repeat. Ignoring her, I make my way to the elevator that will take me straight to my floor. Good morning, Mr. Gray. Barry on security greets me as he presses the button to summon the elevator. How's your son, Barry?
Better, sir. I'm glad to hear it. I step into the elevator and it shoots up to the 20th floor. Andrea is on hand to greet me.
Good morning, Mr. Gray. Roz wants to see you to discuss the Darfur project. Barney would like a few minutes.
I hold my hand up to silence her. Forget those for now. Get me Welch on the line and find out when Flynn is back from vacation. Once I've spoken to Welch, we can pick up the day's schedule.
Yes, sir.
And I need a double espresso. Get Olivia to make it for me. But looking around, I notice that Olivia is absent. It's a relief. The girl is always mooning over me, and it's fucking irritating.
Would you like milk, sir?
Andrea asks. Good girl. I give her a smile. Not today. I do like to keep them guessing how I take my coffee.
Very good, Mr. Gray.
She looks pleased with herself, which she should be. She's the best PA I've had. 3 minutes later, she has Welch on the line.
Welch? Mr. Gray.
The background check you did for me last week. Anastasia Steele, studying at WSU.
Yes, sir, I remember.
I'd like you to find out when her last final exam takes place, and let me know as a matter of priority.
Very good, sir. Anything else?
No, that will be all. I hang up and stare at the books on my desk. I need to find a quote. Roz, my number two and my chief operating officer, is in full flow. We're getting clearance from the Sudanese authorities to put the shipments into Port Sudan, but our contacts on the ground are hesitant about the road journey to Darfur. They're doing a risk assessment to see how viable it is. Logistics must be tough. Her normal sunny disposition is absent. We could always airdrop.
Christian, the expense of an airdrop.
I know. Let's see what our NGO friends come back with.
Okay,
she says and sighs. I'm also waiting for the all clear from the State Department. I roll my eyes. Fucking red tape. If we have to grease some palms or get Senator Blandino to intervene, let me know.
So the next topic is where to site the new plant. You know the tax breaks in Detroit are huge. I sent you a summary.
I know. But God doesn't have to be Detroit.
I don't know what you have against the place. It meets our criteria.
Okay. Get Bill to check out potential brownfield sites, and let's do one more site search to see if any other municipality would offer more favorable terms.
Bill has already sent Ruth out there to meet with the Detroit Brownfield Redevelopment Authority, who couldn't be more accommodating, but I'll ask Bill to do a final check.
My phone buzzes.
Yes,
I growl at Andrea. She knows I hate being interrupted in a meeting.
I have Welch for you.
My watch says 11:30. That was quick. Put him through. I signal for Roz to stay.
Mr. Gray?
Welch, what news?
Miss Steele's last exam is tomorrow, May 20th.
Damn, I don't have long.
Great, that's all I need to know.
I hang up. Roz, bear with me one moment. I pick up the phone. Andrea answers immediately. Andrea, I need a blank note card to write a message within the next hour, I say, and hang up.
Right. Roz, where were we?
At 12:30, Olivia shuffles into my office with lunch. She's a tall, willowy girl with a pretty face. Sadly, it's always misdirected at me with longing. She's carrying a tray with what I hope is something edible. After a busy morning, I'm starving. She trembles as she puts it on my desk. Tuna salad. Okay. She hasn't fucked this up for once. She also places three different white cards, all different sizes, with corresponding envelopes on my desk.
Great.
I mutter.
Now go.
She scuttles out. I take one bite of tuna to assuage my hunger, then reach for my pen. I've chosen a quote. A warning. I made the correct choice, walking away from her. Not all men are romantic heroes. I'll take the word menfolk out. She'll understand. Why didn't you tell me there was danger? Why didn't you warn me? Ladies know what to guard against because they read novels that tell them of these tricks.
I slip the card into the envelope provided, and on it write Anna's address, which is ingrained in my memory from Welch's background check. I buzz Andrea.
Yes, Mr. Gray.
Can you come in, please?
Yes, sir.
She appears at my door a moment later.
Mr. Gray?
Take these, package them, and courier them to Anastasia Steele, the girl who interviewed me last week. Here's her address.
Right away, Mr. Gray.
They have to arrive by tomorrow at the latest.
Yes, sir. Will that be all?
No. Find me a set of replacements.
For these books?
Yes, first editions. Get Olivia on it.
What books are these?
Tests of the D'Urbervilles.
Yes, sir.
She gives me a rare smile and leaves my office. Why is she smiling? She never smiles. Dismissing the thought, I wonder if that will be the last I see of the books. And I have to acknowledge that deep down, I hope not.
Friday, May 20th, 2011. I've slept well for the first time in 5 days. Maybe I'm feeling the closure I had hoped for now that I've sent those books to Anastasia. As I shave, the asshole in the mirror stares back at me with cool gray eyes. Liar. Fuck. Okay. I'm hoping she'll call. She has my number. Mrs. Jones looks up when I walk into the kitchen.
Good morning, Mr. Gray.
Morning, Gail.
What would you like for breakfast?
I'll have an omelet, thank you. I sit at the kitchen counter as she prepares my food and leaf through the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. Then I pore over the Seattle Times. While I'm lost in the papers, my phone buzzes. It's Elliot. What the hell does my big brother want? Elliot? Dude, I need to get out of Seattle this weekend. This chick is all over my junk and I've got to get away.
Your junk?
Yeah, you would know if you had any. I ignore his jibe, and then a devious thought occurs to me. How about hiking around Portland? We could go this afternoon, stay down there, come home Sunday. Sounds cool? In the chopper, or do you want to drive? It's a helicopter, Elliot, and I'll drive us down. Come by the office at lunchtime and we'll head out. Thanks, bro, I owe you. Elliot hangs up. Elliot has always had a problem containing himself, as do the women he associates with. Whoever the unfortunate girl is, she's just another in a long, long line of his casual liaisons.
Mr. Gray, what would you like to do for food this weekend?
Just prepare something light and leave it in the fridge. I may be back on Saturday. Or I may not. She didn't give you a second glance, Gray. Having spent a great deal of my working life managing others' expectations, I should be better at managing my own. Elliot sleeps most of the way to Portland. Poor fucker must be fried. Working and fucking. That's Elliot's raison d'etre. He sprawls out in the passenger seat and snores. Some company he's going to be. It'll be after 3 when we arrive in Portland, so I call Andrea on the hands-free.
Mr. Gray?
She answers in 2 rings. Can you have 2 mountain bikes delivered to the Heathman?
For what time, sir?
3.
The bikes are for you and your brother?
Yes.
Your brother is about 6'2"?
Yes.
I'll get on it right away.
Great. I hang up, then call Taylor. Mr. Gray, he answers on 1 ring. What time will you be here? I'll check in around 9 o'clock tonight. Will you bring the R8? With pleasure, sir. Taylor is a car fanatic, too. Good. I end the call and turn up the music. Let's see if Elliot can sleep through the verve. As we cruise down I-5, my excitement mounts. Have the books been delivered yet? I'm tempted to call Andrea again, but I know I've left her with a ton of work. Besides, I don't want to give my staff an excuse to gossip. I don't normally do this kind of shit.
Why did you send them in the first place? Because I want to see her again. We pass the exit for Vancouver, and I wonder if she's finished her exam.
Hey, man, where are we at?
Elliot blurts. Behold, he wakes, I mutter. We're nearly there. We're going mountain biking.
We are?
Yes.
Cool. Remember when Dad used to take us?
Yep. I shake my head at the memory. My father is a polymath, a real Renaissance man. Academic, sporting, at ease in the city, more at ease in the great outdoors. He'd embraced three adopted kids, and I'm the one who didn't live up to his expectations. But before I hit adolescence, we had a bond. He'd been my hero. He used to love taking us camping and doing all the outdoor pursuits I now enjoy. Sailing, kayaking, biking. We did it all. Puberty ruined all that for me. I figured if we were arriving mid-afternoon, we wouldn't have time for a hike.
Good thinking.
So who are you running from?
Man, I'm a love 'em and leave 'em type, you know that. No strings.
I don't know, chicks find out you run your own business and they start getting crazy ideas. He gives me a sideways look.
You've got the right idea keeping your dick to yourself.
I don't think we're discussing my dick, we are discussing yours. And who's been on the sharp end of it recently?
Elliot snickers. I've lost count. Anyway, enough of me. How's the stimulating world of commerce and high finance?
You really want to know? I shoot him a glance.
Nah, he bleats, and I laugh at his apathy and lack of eloquence.
How's the business? I ask.
You checking on your investment?
Always. It's my job.
Well, we broke ground on the Spokane Eden project last week, and it's on schedule, but then it's only been a week.
He shrugs. Beneath his somewhat casual exterior, my brother is an eco-warrior. His passion for sustainable living makes for some heated Sunday dinner conversations with the family, and his latest project is an eco-friendly development of low-cost housing north of Seattle.
I'm hoping to install that new gray water system I was telling you about. It will mean all the homes will reduce their water usage and their bills by 25%.
Impressive.
I hope so.
We drive in silence into downtown Portland, and just as we're pulling into the underground garage at the Heathman, the last place I saw her, Elliot mutters,
"You know, we're missing the Mariners game this evening.
Maybe you can have a night in front of the TV, give your dick a rest, and watch baseball."
Sounds like a plan.
Keeping up with Elliot is a challenge. He tears down the trail with the same devil-may-fucking-care attitude he applies to most situations. Elliot knows no fear. It's why I admire him. But riding at this pace, I have no chance to appreciate our surroundings. I'm vaguely aware of the lush greenery flashing past me, but my eyes are on the trail, trying to avoid the potholes. By the end of the ride, we're both filthy and exhausted.
That was the most fun I've had with my clothes on in a while, Elliot says as we hand the bikes over to the bellboy at the Heathman.
Yeah, I mutter, and then recall holding Anastasia when I saved her from the cyclist. Her warmth, her breasts pressed against me, her scent invading my senses. I had my clothes on then.
Yeah, I murmur again.
We check our phones in the elevator as we head up to the top floor. I have emails, a couple of texts from Elena asking what I'm doing this weekend, but no missed calls from Anastasia. It's just before 7 o'clock. She must have received the books by now. The thought depresses me. I've come all the way to Portland on a wild goose chase again.
Man, that chick has called me 5 times and sent me 4 texts. Doesn't she know how desperate she comes across?
Elliot whines.
Maybe she's pregnant.
Elliot pales and I laugh.
Not funny, hotshot, he grumbles. Besides, I haven't known her that long. Or that often.
After a quick shower, I join Elliot in his suite, and we sit down to watch the rest of the Mariners game against the San Diego Padres. We order up steak, salad, fries, and a couple of beers, and I sit back to enjoy the game in Elliot's easy company. I've resigned myself to the fact that Anastasia is not going to call. The Mariners are in the lead, and it looks like it might be a blowout. Disappointingly, it isn't, though the Mariners win 4-1. Go Mariners. Elliot and I clink beer bottles. As the post-game analysis drones on, my phone buzzes and Miss Steele's number flashes on the screen. It's her. Anastasia? I don't hide my surprise or my pleasure. The background is noisy and it sounds like she's at a party or in a bar. Elliot glances at me, so I get up off the sofa and out of his earshot.
Why did you send me the books?
She's slurring her words, and a wave of apprehension ripples down my spine. Anastasia, are you okay? You sound strange.
I'm not the strange one. You are.
Her tone is accusatory. Anastasia, have you been drinking?
Hell.
Who is she with? The photographer? Where's her friend Kate?
What's it to you?
She sounds surly and belligerent. And I know she's drunk, but I also need to know that she's okay.
I'm curious. Where are you?
In a bar.
Which bar?
Tell me. Anxiety blooms in my gut. She's a young woman, drunk, somewhere in Portland. She's not safe.
A bar in Portland.
How are you getting home? I pinch the bridge of my nose in the vain hope that the action will distract me from my fraying temper.
I'll find a way.
What the hell? Will she drive? I ask her again which bar she's in, and she ignores my question.
Why did you send me the books, Christian?
Anastasia, where are you? Tell me, now.
How will she get home? You're so domineering.
She giggles. In any other situation, I would find this charming. But right now, I want to show her how domineering I can be. She's driving me crazy. Anna, so help me, where the fuck are you? She giggles again. Shit, she's laughing at me. Again.
I'm in Portland. It's a long way from Seattle.
Where in Portland?
Good night, Christian.
The line goes dead. Anna! She hung up on me. I stare at the phone in disbelief. No one has ever hung up on me. What the fuck?
What's the problem?
Elliot calls over from the sofa. I've just been drunk dialed. I peer at him and his mouth drops open in surprise.
You?
Yep. I press the callback button, trying to contain my temper and my anxiety.
Hi,
she says, all breathy and timid, and she's in quieter surroundings. I'm coming to get you. My voice is arctic as I wrestle with my anger and snap my phone shut. I've got to go get this girl and take her home. Do you want to come? Elliot is staring at me as if I've grown three heads. You? With a chick? This I have to see. Elliot grabs his sneakers and starts putting them on. I just have to make a call. I wander into his bedroom while I decide if I should call Barney or Welch. Barney is the most senior engineer in the telecommunications division of my company. He's a tech genius, but what I want is not strictly legal. Best to keep this away from my company. I speed dial Welch, and within seconds his rasping voice answers. Mr. Gray? I'd really like to know where Anastasia Steele is right now.
I see.
He pauses for a moment.
Leave it to me, Mr. Gray.
I know this is outside the law, but she could be getting herself into trouble.
Thank you. I'll get back to you in a couple of minutes.
Elliot is rubbing his hands with glee, with a stupid smirk on his face when I return to the living room. Oh, for fuck's sake.
I wouldn't miss this for the world, he says, gloating.
I'm just going to get the car keys. I'll meet you in the garage in 5, I growl, ignoring his smug face. The bar is crowded, full of students determined to have a good time. There's some indie crap thumping over the sound system, and the dance floor is crowded with heaving bodies. It makes me feel old. She's here somewhere. Elliot has followed me in through the front door.
Do you see her?
He shouts over the noise. Scanning the room, I spot Catherine Cavanaugh. She's with a group of friends, all of them men, sitting in a booth. There's no sign of Anna, but the table is littered with shot glasses and tumblers of beer. Well, let's see if Miss Cavanaugh is as loyal to her friend as Anna is to her. She looks at me in surprise when we arrive at her table. Catherine, I say by way of greeting, and she interrupts me before I can ask her Anna's whereabouts.
Christian, what a surprise to see you here,
she shouts above the noise. The three guys at the table regard Elliot and me with hostile wariness. I was in the neighborhood.
And who's this?
She smiles rather too brightly at Elliot, interrupting me again. What an exasperating woman.
This is my brother, Elliot. Elliot, Catherine Cavanaugh. Where's Anna?
Her smile broadens at Elliot, and I'm surprised by his answering grin.
I think she went outside for some fresh air,
Cavanaugh responds, but she doesn't look at me. She has eyes only for Mr. Love'em and Leave'em. Well, it's her funeral.
Outside? Where?
I shout.
Oh, that way.
She points to double doors at the far end of the bar. Pushing through the throng, I make my way to the door, leaving the three disgruntled men and Cavanaugh and Elliot engaged in a grin-off. Through the double doors, there is a line for the ladies' washroom, and beyond that, a door that's open to the outside. It's at the back of the bar. Ironically, it leads to the parking lot where Elliot and I have just been. Walking outside, I find myself in a gathering space adjacent to the parking lot, a hangout flanked by raised flower beds where a few people are smoking, drinking, chatting, making out. I spot her. Hell. She's with the photographer, I think, though it's difficult to tell in the dim light. She's in his arms, but she seems to be twisting away from him. He mutters something to her, which I don't hear, and kisses her along her jaw.
Jose, no,
she says, and then it's clear. She's trying to push him off. She doesn't want this. For a moment, I want to rip his head off. With my hands fisted at my side, I march up to them. I think the lady said no. My voice carries, cold and sinister, in the relative quiet, while I struggle to contain my anger. He releases Anna, and she squints at me with a dazed, drunken expression.
Gray,
he says, his voice terse, and it takes every ounce of my self-control not to smash the disappointment off his face. Anna heaves, then buckles over and vomits on the ground. Oh, shit.
Ugh! Dios mío, Anna!
Jose leaps out of the way in disgust. Fucking idiot. Ignoring him, I grab her hair and hold it out of the way as she continues to throw up everything she's had this evening. It's with some annoyance that I note she doesn't appear to have eaten. With my arm around her shoulders, I lead her away from the curious onlookers toward one of the flower beds. If you're going to throw up again, do it here. I'll hold you. It's darker here. She can puke in peace. She vomits again and again, her hands on the brick. It's pitiful. Once her stomach is empty, she continues to retch, long, dry heaves. Boy, she's got it bad. Finally, her body relaxes, and I think she's finished. Releasing her, I give her my handkerchief, which by some miracle I have in the inside pocket of my jacket. Thank you, Mrs. Jones.
Wiping her mouth, she turns and rests against the bricks, avoiding eye contact because she's ashamed and embarrassed. And yet, I'm so pleased to see her.